Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bechoros Daf Lamed Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin 10 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Dalid. We actually concluded or ended our previous shiur in the middle of a discussion. So, just to recap where we are holding, in our previous discussion we were introduced to a Tanaic source dealing with a barrel of Truma wine concerning which there had been a doubt concerning its purity, its Tahara. The Braisa on the Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis indicated a Chovish Shel Truma Shenolad Bo Sofek Tuma. And in that Braisa, we saw machlokes between Rabbi Elezer and Rabbi Yeshua as to how to deal with such a barrel. We saw Rabbi Elezer take a precautious approach, and Rabbi Yeshua quite the opposite. We said toward the end of our previous year that this machlokes was based on how to understand a posuk. Posuk in Bamidbar, Perek Yud Ches, Posuk Ches. In that posuk, Rabbi Elezer said that the term Mishmeres Trumosai was to be understood as referring to two Trumos, because the word Trumosai is read in the plural, and the word Mishmeres indicates guarding. So Rabbi Elezer, his cautious approach, being based on this particular reading of the Pasuk. And Rabbi Yeshua, in looking at the Pasuk, said, you don't base your understanding on the way it's read, but rather as the letters appear, as they appear in the Torah, namely without vowels. And if I were to approach this word without vowels and read it based on the letters, it would come out in the singular, Trumasi. And hence the concept of guarding or taking care of Truma, preventing it from becoming Tomei, this would apply only to Truma Tahora, not Truma concerning which there is a matter of doubt. So according to this approach, we indicate that Rabbi Eliezer bases his drasha, bases his conclusions on the way the Pasuk is actually read, not the way the words appear. Before we actually get into the Gemara's text and the question that we open up with, just a word concerning markings. We have a few lines above this particular point, you'll notice a Roman numeral number 1 to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. We also have a similar number positioned over the word Trumosai. On the outside margin, under our Mivneh heading, the Mivneh being a structural note in our Gemara marking system, the Shas Ozir, which you see on your screen, the cornerstone of Gemara markings, we provide topic headings that we call Nosei and structural notes that we call Mivneh from time to time in the outside margin. In this case, under our Mivneh heading, you see we have featured Roman numerals number 1 and 2, and we've indicated as an explanation, Shnei Shlavim, these are two stages, Lahazbir, My Holkin Legabi HaPosuk Betruma. What is the point of controversy between Rabbi Elezer and Rabbi Yeshua is concerned as far as the Posuk? So up till now, we have their machlokas surrounding the way one approaches words in the Torah, bearing in mind, once again, that the Torah has itself no vowels in it. Rabbi Elezer bases his conclusions on the way we read the word, and Rabbi Yeshua bases his words on the way the word appears. This raises a question, and that is that we find precedent concerning Rabbi Eliezer that he doesn't darshan words, he doesn't base his conclusions on the way a word is read, but rather on the way the word appears by way of letters. And as we said before, the way letters appear doesn't necessarily parallel the way the word is actually read in the Torah, when you read it in shul. or you read it from a Chumash. The topic that the Gemara introduces, that forms the question, concerns the rights a father has regarding his daughter. According to Torah law, a father can sell his daughter into a form of servitude known as amu ivria, up till the point she reaches age 12, and a father also has the rights of marrying her off. The Gemara is rather elaborate on this particular topic in Maseches Kiddushin, and there the discussion concerns if a father, let us say, exercised his rights of selling her into servitude, and she, let us say, leaves that period of servitude, without getting into details how, but she leaves that period, what further rights does a father have? Can he sell her again into servitude? This issue depends on how you read, how you approach the pasuk in Sefer Shmos, where the expression appears bevigdoi ba. Bevigdo is the way that particular word is read when you read the Torah. However, without vowels, you would have read that word bebogdoi ba. Bogdoi literally has to do with someone who acts unfaithfully or treacherously. However, in this case, the word bogdo is going to be associated with a father selling his daughter into servitude. The word bigdo, if you approach that word the way it appears, the way it is read in the Torah, not the way it appears, but the way it's read, bigdo would indicate giving her into marriage. The word bigdo, coming from the word beged, a talis, a garment which, in the case of a marriage, serves as a covering or a canopy, which is a term associated with marriage. That has been said by us by way of introduction. Now, let us go into the Gemara text, and then we'll try to emphasize what the problem is as we go on. So up till now we open up with the Gemara, as we said, 10 lines from the top. You'll notice the first word on the line is Trumosai, and in the middle of the line it says, Lameimra, this is now a question, Lameimra, do Rabbi Elazar Savar, Yesh Aim Lamikra. The word aim means main way of darshaning something, of explaining something. Are we to suggest, based on our previous sukya, that Rabbi Eliezer emphasizes the way a pasuk is read? And that's what we had said before when, and you can notice we have this dashed underline just above, Mishmeres Trumosai, where Rabbi Eliezer concluded that even concerning Sofek Tuma, you have to treat the Truma wine with in a guarded fashion. That's a result of emphasizing the word, the way we read the word in the Torah, Trumosai in the plural. However, Viramini, we raise a contradiction. Bevigdoi ba, as we said, this is a reference to the issue of a father's rights concerning his minor daughter. Kivan Shapiresh Taliso Aleha, this is not Rabbi Lezer's opinion, this is Rabbi Akiva's opinion, who says that we read it as Bevigdoba, and that's the way we darshan it. In other words, according to the way it's read in the Torah, we darshan Kivan Shapiresh Taliso Aleha, once he spreads the talis over his daughter, which means marriage. It's not so important for us to translate the words literally, other than to realize that the word bigdo comes from the word beged, and this idea of spreading a garment over is a reference to marriage. So once a father marries off his daughter, shuv eino rashoi lemochra, he can no longer sell her into a period of servitude. Let us say he married off his daughter, and her husband dies, and she returns to her father's home. He can no longer sell her. He can't exercise his right in selling her, even though she is still a minor. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. That's Rabbi Akiva's approach. Rabbi Elazar Omer, he takes a different approach to this pasuk, and he says, Kivan shebogad ba, shuv eino rashoi lemochra. Once he has, bogad means he sold her into servitude. Once he has done that, he loses his rights to sell her a second time into servitude, in the event that her first period terminated while she still was a minor. What is the point for our discussion? The point is that Rabbi Eliezer comes to his conclusion concerning this issue of what continued rights does a father have based on the way the letters appear, not based on the way it's read. Rabbi Akiva emphasizes the way it's read, but not Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer concludes his conclusions based on the way the letters appear. Now, if that be the case, so what is the explanation for Rabbi Eliezer back in the case of the Truma? So the Gemara answers, this is now approach number two. This we have a Roman numeral number two indicating new approach to the Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua regarding the Truma. Elohocho be'licho komifligi. The Pasuk had said, Vani hine nosati licho es mishmeres trumosoi. The word licho is the point of controversy. Once again, Elohocho be'licho komifligi. Dichtiv vani nosati licho mishmeres. Rabbi Yeshua sovar. Horu'uyo licho shmor. The word licho means unto you. And he takes it to mean that which is fit unto you, that shmor, you have to watch, you have to keep care of, not allow, try to prevent tumah from setting upon it. However, v'she'eino ru'uyo licho, for example, something that's not fit for you, something that has a sofek tumah label associated with it, something that's whose purity is not clear, lo tishmor, you don't have to guard it at all. And hence Rabbi Yeshua had said that if you have a barrel of Suffolk Tumah wine, you can expose it and put it in a location where it will most likely become Tomei. Rabbi Lezer, Ho'nami Ru'uyahi, Rabbi Lezer, who is strict with regard to the barrel of Suffolk Tumah wine, he says this wine is also considered fit for you, and hence it comes under the heading of Licha. Why? Shemo Yov Elio Vitareno. The prophet Elio may come and declare the issue of doubt as being a matter of certainty in the direction of purity, that it's certainly tohor, and hence it would be fit to be consumed. Before we go further in the Gemara, let us take advantage of our topic heading in the outside margin, the Nosei, and we call this a Biwur, an analysis of Lomot Srichin, what is the need for Hod Shmuel, for the teaching of Shmuel in this particular Gemara, the Omar Halachic Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shmuel in the upcoming Gemara will rule that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Now, Rabbi Shimon, he addressed the issue, of course, in our previous sugya. He was found in the Mishnah on Lama Gimel Beis that spoke about the bloodletting of a Bechor that happened to be Ochsoy Dam. It was very ill, and Rabbi Shimon says you can bloodlet and insert the lancet, which will enable the blood release to take place, even in a part of the body that a blemish will be created. Of course, it is forbidden to impose in a premeditated fashion a blemish in a firstborn animal or in any korban for that matter. There's an issur of making a balmum in kochim. However, Rabbi Shimon says, since my kavona is for healing the animal, it is okay. So we continue in our note, that is, that paskining like Rabbi Shimon de mashma de dovor she'eno miskavein muter, that something done, an action done without a sinful intention is okay. So our question is, what do I need Shmuel to paskin like that for? We know that from other locations, other places. As we go on in the Gemara, we will also notice double underline with dots in it. This is one of our series markings, and under our Mivneh heading, you can see we featured this double underline and noted E, Lamo, and Ella. These are stages in trying to figure out what I need this ruling of Shmuel for. So now we turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halacha K'Rabbi Shimon. The Halacha will follow the approach of Rabbi Shimon. Notice we have a long question marking. This appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. You see a shin that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. Maskif lo Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok. Hey, Rabbi Shimon, which Rabbi Shimon is being referred to when Shmuel paskins and he rules that Aloch is like Rabbi Shimon? E lemo Rabbi Shimon demas nisen. If it is as we explained earlier in presenting the Gemara, that it's like Rabbi Shimon of the Mishnah that says that you can bloodlet even in a place that a mum will be created. which, as we said, would indicate that we are ruling davar she'ein miskavein muter, an unintentional action, even though the result is negative. Since it was unintentional, it's okay. Well, if that's what Rabbi is, if that's what Shmuel is trying to accomplish here, to convey that ruling, ad hashta lo ashmina and Shmuel, have we not heard till now from Shmuel that davar she'ein miskavein muter? The whole Rebbe Chiya Bar Ashi Omar Rav. We know in Maseches Shabbos, Rav Chiya Bar Ashi quoted Rav as saying Halachah Rebbe Yehuda. The Rav Chonin Bar Ashi Omar Shmuel Halachah Rebbe Shimon. In a well-known Machlokas Tanoim between Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Shimon concerning this issue of Dover Shein Meskavein, we find Shmuel already ruled there in Maseches Shabbos that the Halacha follows Rebbe Shimon that Dover Shein Meskavein is mutter. Rav Chiya Bar Oven Masni below Gavri. Rav Chiya Bar Oven has an approach by way of names, without additional names, presenting this machlokas as follows: Rav Omar Halacha Rebbe Yehuda, Ushmuel Omar Halacha Rebbe Shimon. This is the same thing as we said just a moment before, but it, as far as Rav Chiya Bar Oven's approach, he introduces the machlokas straight out without introductory names like Rav Chiya Bar Ashi and Rav Chonin Bar Ashi. The main point, though, is for Shmuel to paskin, to rule over here in our Gemara, like Rabbi Shimon, and intend to convey the idea, like Rabbi Shimon, of the Mishnah, which indicates Dovar Shein Miskavein Mutter, that we already know. Ela, the Gemara answers, Rabbi Shimon de Braisa. Shmuel's intent over here to rule like Rabbi Shimon is a reference to Rabbi Shimon in the Braisa. Notice we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a Lamed Gimel Amid Beis notation that indicates look back on Lamed Gimel Amid Beis, and you will see if you scan down the page about halfway down, Rabbi Shimon had ruled that concerning the mum that is made as a result of the Hakazas Adam, Rabbi Shimon then said over there, not only is it allowed to be made, but one can even shecht the Bechor, one can slaughter the Bechor based on that mum and not have to wait, let us say, for another mum to heal. So the ruling of Shmuel over here is a ruling of Rabbi Shimon in the Braisa that said that you can even shecht the Bechor based on this mum that you created. Rav Shisha b'Rei Rav Idi Masni Lo Behedya. Rav Shisha teaches this in a explicit fashion without having had to, let's say, go through the guesswork here. Which Rabbi Shimon? He says he presents his version of Rabbi Yehuda very simply. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Halacha Rabbi Shimon de Braisa. And so that there is no room for making a mistake as to his paskening like Rabbi Shimon of the Mishnah, because he says the word Braisa explicitly. Now, we approach a new Mishnah. Before we learn the Mishnah, let us glance at the outside margin for the Noseh heading. Hatsoreim, or Pogeim Oizen Bechor, one who notches or injures the ear of a firstborn male animal. And as we've been speaking quite a bit in the past, firstborn male animals, if they are blemish-free, they are given to a Kohen, and he brings it as a korban. Here we have an individual that imposed a blemish, a mum, in the Bechor by notching its ear. We will see a machlokas tanoim im koinsim oisoi. Do we impose a fine on this this violator? Ula oilam lo yehei muter. And as a result of a premeditated blemish being made in the Bechor, we will say that it will never become muter again. Bagamora malim stira mi baheres shikotzitzo. In the Gemara, we will see the Gemara will raise a contradiction from a different area of halacha, which has to do with a nega. This is a discoloration that we know under the general term of tsaras, a skin discoloration, which, as we said, is called tsaras. There is a Torah prohibition of cutting off, of removing the skin discoloration in order to create the impression that the person is not a mitzora. So the Gemara will raise a contradiction to that which we learn in our Mishnah from a source concerning Baheres Shekotzitzo, Denira Shirbelezer Mekil, Velo Koines Oilamis, Vachachomim Koinsin. Whereas in our Mishnah, Rebelezer indicates that there's a permanent fine and no possible allowance made for this case of the Bechor, that someone imposed a move on it by notching its ear. And in the case of the Baheres, Rabbi Elezer takes a lenient approach, where there isn't a permanent fine imposed against him. Of course, the job of the Gemara on Lamed Dalet Amud Beis will be to resolve this seeming contradiction. Now the Mishnah. Hatzoreim Oizen Bechor. Someone who notches the ear of a firstborn male animal. Harei ze lo yishchot oylomis, divrei Rabbi Elezer. This animal will not be allowed to be slaughtered forever. And of course, if you're talking about a bechor bezman hazeh, that means there will be no hope, no future for this animal. And the same, of course, is true in the case of the time of the Beis HaMikdash. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it's just one added feature is that if no mum had been imposed on it, it would have been brought as a sacrifice. That's Shitas Rabbi Elezer, and we've dashed underline the main word Oilomis means a permanent prohibition. V'chachomim omrim kishi voleid boy mum acher yishchot olav. When another mum appears, based on that second mum, that second blemish, we will say that establishes it as a bal mum, and you will be able to slaughter the bechor. Just to review and emphasize the main point, Rabbi Elezer takes a stringent approach, a permanent knas. The Chachamim do not take a stringent approach. They are lenient and allow for permission based on the appearance of a second mum. Now the Gemara. We start with a long question. You'll notice that this long question takes in basically a Tanaic source, which takes us to the fourth line from the top of Omid Beis. The Gemara asks, "Umi konis Rabbi Eliezer l'yoylom? Does Rabbi Eliezer impose a permanent fine that it will never become allowed?" V'ramini, we raise a contradiction from the following Tanaic source: "Mi shehoisa loy baheres v'niktitza tohar." If a person had a baheres we said is a nega, it's a skin discoloration we call tsaras, and it became cut off from the person's body without intention, so the person can enjoy a state of purification, of tahara. Kotzitza b'miskaveh, if he premeditated, knowingly removed the baheres with the intent of making himself tahar, Rabbi Elezer omer, l'chishivoleid loy nega acher itaher heimenu. When a second nega appears, this will enable him to experience tahara from the first nega that he happened to have cut off. So right away you see a possibility of tahara with regard to Rabbi Elezer. You don't see, even though a wrongful act was done, there was kotzitza b'miskaveh, and even so we see the person being able to achieve tahara in the future. V'chachomim omrim, the chachomim disagree and say ad shetifrach bekuloi, oi ad shetimoet baharoso mikigris. The Rashi explains ad shetifrach bekulo nega ha'acharon, a second nega would have to, if it appears, would have to spread over his whole body. V'leko lemecha shlemidi, Rashi goes on, da ihavi be kamo, even if the first one was still there, hashto nami havi tohor. Even if the first nega was not cut off, and you have a situation where his entire body becomes covered with this discoloration, ironically, but that's the way the Torah operates here, he is declared tohor. Kirichti v'chiso atzoras es kol or hanega. Rashi goes on, Oy ad shetesmoet baharoso rishona mikigris koidem shikotetza. Or you can have a situation where the original nega that he did cut off before he cut it off, it had become less than a gris in size. A gris is a particular type of bean. It's a reference to a certain size. So if it became reduced before he cut it off, so that would have been a reason for declaring tahara anyway. Avol, and now we go through the main point of Rashi. Avol I b'shal shekotzu have be shiur nega. If at the point he cut it off, it had the size of a real nega, a nega which imposes tuma upon the ruling of a kohen who says this is a nega. Ein lo taro elomis. He will not experience any further taro de kansinon le laolam. We say too bad. In other words, if he cut off a nega that was more than a gris in size, so he says, Rashi explains under the Chachomim here that he will not have any more tahara. So you see the Chachomim here take a very strict approach, quite the contrary to the way they approach the issue of the Tzoreim Bechor. So at this point we see a contradiction. Rabbi Lezer, in the case of the Bechor, was very strict, and here he is allowing for tahara in the case of the Baharis. To resolve this, Rabbo Rav Yosef Dami Travayu, they both explain, both Rabbo and Rav Yosef, Ki Kunis Rabbi Lezer, when does Rabbi Lezer impose his fine or his restriction? This is to say that there will be no longer any salvation or any hope. That's Bimamono, when it comes to financial matters or possessions, and in this case we were talking about a Bechor. However, Begufoi Loi Kunis. But however, when it comes to matters concerning his own body, Rabbi Lezer does not impose this type of stringency. And now, explanation. Mamono, when it comes to the person's possessions, Iko Lemeimar, if we wouldn't be strict, there is room to suspect the Osi Lemevad Mimonav Shach. He will have an incentive to impose a mum, feeling that he has salvation either way. Therefore, since there's a certain incentive to impose a mum, we have to take preemptive action and say that if you impose a mum, then you will have no salvation, no hope to see allowance of this animal ever again. Now Rashi explains this a little further. B'mamono osi lemevad mimonav shach. Either way, the savar, the person figures atil bomum. Well, you know, as if we wouldn't impose this fine, the owner of an animal could say, well, I'll impose a mum on my animal. V'im yatiruhu li b'kach hare niskarti. If they rule that this is a real mum, so then here I've benefited. I now have a blemished animal and it can be slaughtered. V'im lav. And if they don't rule it to be a blemish, ma'if sadati im amtin al mum acher, what do I lose if I have to now wait for another mum? Belav hochi, even without having to wait for another mum, nami hoyisi mamtin ad shi pol mum, I would have had to wait anyway until another mum appears. Of course, if they had ruled that this mum is not a real mum, hilkoch, as a result of this calculation that a person might make, kansinon le la'olam afilu yipol bo mum acher, even if another mum does appear, we tell him by way of a preemptive action, preemptive ruling, we say, even if another mum appears, it won't help you. So as to prevent a person from doing what we just described above, a person like taking his chances and imposing a mum, thinking that it might work to his benefit. So we say that if he imposes a mum, even the appearance of a subsequent mum will not enable you to benefit from this animal. However, as far as Gufo is concerned, the issue of the Baharis, we say, the Gemara goes on to say, Gufo mi iko lemeimer dosi lemevad. In the case of the Baharis, is there any room to say that a person will come to do it? Let us look at the Rashi. Begufo mi iko lemeimer demanchinon lesveiko velekutz, that a person would leave the sofek and cut it off. I lo kansinon le laolam, if in the event that we would not impose a permanent fine, do you think a person would have a motivation for cutting it off? Havadai lo ovid inish. A person certainly would not have. He doesn't have motivation or incentive to cut off the baheres. Kevon dekonis le'ad shiyvoled nega acher. It is enough that we make a knas until another nega develops. The chayish shemo nega acher lo yivoled lo. A person isn't going to cut off a baharis in anticipation of another one arising, because another nega might never come about. Li'olam. V'lo etaher li'olam. And he'll never get better. V'afilu im yivoled, and even if a second nega does come about, ma'ahani lo b'ktitzo. Of what benefit was cutting off the first one? Of what benefit would that be to this man? Harei hu nagua kibatchila. If in the event that we are waiting for the second nega to come about, well, it's still there. The second nega is there when it comes about. So mutav lo loniach ezeh, better for him to leave the original nega there. Shema tirape, maybe it will get better. In other words, he'll get better faster by not doing anything. So we don't have to build in an incentive or a deterrent for this individual to deter him from cutting off a baharis. He has no incentive to cut it off in the first place, as we just explained. So we see a major distinction between the case of Gufo and Mamono. In the case of Mamono, without imposing a permanent knas, a person will have an incentive to practice this foul play of making mumin. In the case of Gufo, however, we don't have to impose any permanent knas in order to deter a person from cutting off a baharis. He has no incentive to cut it off in the first place. Omar Rava, continuing in the Gemara, Rava now addresses the Tanoim that we have mentioned, and he says, are you saying, as we said earlier, that with regard to Rabbi Elazar, there seemed to be a contradiction which we dealt with, but according to the Rabbanan, there is no contradiction? One second, in the case of Bechor, we saw that the Rabbanan did not impose a knas. In the case of the Baharis, we saw that the Rabbanan did impose a knas. And that we saw in the case of a person who would cut off a Baharis that had already been the size of a gris, so a person like that has no hope. So we see that the Rabbanan also have a contradiction to deal with. Ella, Rava goes on to say, as far as the seeming contradiction within Rebbe Elazar, there is really no problem, as we explained. We already explained the difference between Mamono and Gufo. Rabbonon ad Rabbonon nami loi kashya. As far as the Shitas Rabbonon is concerned, there is also no contradiction. Hocha b'mai de'ovad kansuha. Hocha b'mai de'ovad kansuha. The Gemara will go over these two points. So far, the Gemara said, with regard to the making of the mum, so with regard to what he did, there is a fine, there is a restriction imposed, and with regard to the ktsisas baharis, we will also see, based on what he did, we impose a fine. And now, as we said, the Gemara explains. As you notice, we have indicated Aleph and Beis already, the line before this, and we go using the same letters. We continue. B'mai ichvin l'mishrei, in the case of the Bechor, what was this person's intention, the one who made the notch in the Bechor's ear? What was his intention? What was his hope in making? Mishrei means to create an allowance, or create permission to slaughter it. B'hai muma, regarding this particular mum, the mum that he made in the ear. So, kansua rabbonon, the rabbonon imposed a fine, de b'hai muma lo lishteri lei. With regard to this mum, he will not benefit. It doesn't lead to it being allowed. And hence the Rabbanan said that the owner of this Bechor will have to wait for another mum to arise. So the Rabbanan impose a fine regarding the action he did. He did an action of Tzorei Moz no Ozen Bechor, so he cannot benefit from that notch. Continuing in the Gemara, v'hocha b'mai de'ovad kansuha, and here in the case of Baharis, regarding that which he did, they also imposed a fine. B'mai ichvin l'turei nafshei, with what did he intend to achieve tahara? B'hai k'tisa, through the cutting off of this particular nega, this particular discoloration area of his skin. So we say b'hai k'tisa kansua rabbonon. With regard to that particular mum removal, we impose our fine. Now, Rashi explains a little further. You'll notice, Rashi, we have a little star in order to help you find it quickly. A few lines down from here, Rashi says, "B'hai tzitzah kansur abonon, v'kevon d'ach tzitzah enim elis l'taro." Since the cutting off of this particular skin discoloration, we declare it to be ineffective. Nimsa tomei oilomis. The result happens to be that he's permanently tomei. Not a function of a special knas where we say we make a knas forever, but that's just that de facto that's what happens. The chashvinon lenega kamanti ise dami, kamanti ise. We look at this particular nega that he cut off as if it's still there. In other words, we make a knas and say the action that you did is ineffective. So therefore, we view it as if that particular nega is still there. Demi Yemar di Havi Be Havi Mitzi. Who is to say that if the nega was still there, it would have ever gotten better? It might never. And the Shita Mikubetz just adds a couple words. Dilmo Basra Mitzi Kamalo Mitzi. Maybe a second nega that will subsequently appear might get better, but the one that he cut off, if it had been left there, would never get better, and he would always remain a Mitzora. So the Rabbonon are really acting in a very consistent fashion. Regarding the Bechor, they imposed a fine, a restriction regarding the notch in the ear, so that notch doesn't help you, won't make it into a Baal Mum. A second blemish that appears will help. And in the case of the Baharis, the cutting off of that Nega is ineffective. The Vega is viewed as if it were still there. And if it were still there, who says it would ever get better? As we continue in the Gemara, we encounter a long question. You can see we have a long question marking the shin that's encircled that appears in the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. It indicates that all of these lines form the question. We can might as well tell you ahead of time that this question will have a very brief answer, in other words, a non-conclusion, a teku response. But even so, we have to understand the question. Before we actually learn the Gemara, we should take advantage of a little arrow that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Parallel this with a previous appearing arrow. You'll see at the second line from the top an arrow pointing to that line. And on that line, the Tanaic source had said, "The shivolid lo nega acher yitar heimenu." And the focus of the Gemara's question will be on that particular word. Now let us learn the Gemara. Boy mine Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbi Zera. We must retract here. Boy Rabbi Rav Papa. Yitar Tanan Oy V'yitar Tanan. The difference being the letter Vav. Is the source to read Yitar? Which it would say that when a second Nega, when a second mark of Tsaras appears, so Yitar Heimenu, he will be considered cleansed from the first. In other words, the first one is considered a non-factor, and he doesn't have to worry about it. Or V'yitar, with a Vav. And then he will become cleansed from the first. Lamai, before we go on in the Gemara, let us take a look at the Rashi. Yitar Tanan. Rashi says, "Demashma miyad, immediately, kshivoleid bo nega acher yitar min arishona." As soon as a second discoloration appears, the first one is considered gone and is a non-factor. Of course, he cut it off. Physically, it's gone, but halachically, we were viewing it as still present until a second nega appears. Well, when the second nega appears, are we learning yitar, which means that cleanses him from the first one? Oi, Rashi goes on, v'yitar tanan, demashma kshivole bo nega acher, when a second nega appears, v'yitar mimenu, and achieves tara from the second one, mino achron, from that second one, Oz Yitar Min Orishon, then he will be considered cleansed from the first. So to go over this once again, if you say Yitar Tan, it means with the appearance of the first of the second Nega, the first one, namely the one that you cut off, is considered as if it's not there anymore. Or do we say Viyatar, which means if when he becomes cleansed from the second Nega, then and only then do we view the first Nega as also being rid of. The Gemara asks on this particular question, says, Lamai Nafkamina, what difference does this analysis make? In other words, either way, if you want to talk about actual Tahara, actual purification, since everything is dependent on the appearance of a second Nega, even if you say, with the appearance of the second Nega, the first Nega is gone, is we don't have to contend with it anymore, still, he remains Tomei because of the second Nega that appeared. So even if you say Yitar, the first one doesn't have to be dealt with, so what? He's still Tomei. And certainly, according to the other approach, Vietar, we're saying that the first one is still considered there until he achieves Tahara from the second one. Therefore, what practical difference is there whether you learn Yitar or Vietar? So the Gemara answers, there is a practical difference. Lechoson, a person who was just getting married, Shinire Boy Nega. The Disnan, there's a Tanaic source that explains this particular scenario. A Chosan is a person who is about to marry a woman. Chosan, the source says, Chosan Shinira Bonega, Noisnim Loi Shiva Yemei Mishte Loi Utsilisu Ksuso. A person who is about to get married, we say that a Kohen will not look at a mum, that he a nega, this skin discoloration, this potential tsaras, a Kohen will not look at it, won't rule concerning it, until he celebrates the 7 days of festivity that accompany, that are associated with a person getting married. A nega as being a problem, as being a source of tumah, is all dependent on the ruling of the Kohen. So that you can have something that by all standards appears to be a nega, until a Kohen issues a formal ruling, it's not considered a nega. And hence the man will remain tohor. So we say that this chosan, person who's about to get married, we give him the 7 days before a Kohen will rule, and those 7 days apply to itztaliso, means his garments, as his talis and ksuso, other types of garments. That is with that's true. That has bearing with regard to the realm called nigei begodim, discolorations that appear on clothing that also render them tomei. So we say that for 7 days, a Kohen will not rule concerning those matters either. V'chein beregel nosim lo kol yemei horegel. Likewise, a person upon whose skin a discoloration appeared, and it just so happens to be at the beginning of a holiday, we say that the Kohen shall remain silent, not rule, not look at it, and not rule concerning it until the holiday, the regel, the holiday period passes. The Gemara now goes on introducing the practical application of how we read the Mishnah, how we read the Tanaic source that we saw above. E Amris Yitar Tnan. If you learn it without the Vav, and we say that with the appearance of the second Nega, the first one is considered gone. Mikomaisa Toharle. So the first one is considered gone, completely gone. Lebasraisa, as far as the new Nega that appeared, well, we won't say anything about it. Naturally, we will wait Zion Yemei Mishta, the 7 days of his wedding period, before the Kohen says anything. So a person like this will be in a state of Tahara during his wedding period. Elo I Amris V'yitar Tnan. If, however, you say that in the case of the Ktsitsas Baheres, he will experience Tahara only when the second Nega becomes Tohor. In other words, and until that point, the first Nega is still there in our mind's eye, even though we cut it away. Soif, soif, Kilo mitami olabasrai. So even if we remain silent, we don't declare the second nega as being tome. Hometame v'koi mikomaisa. He remains tohor based on the fact that there had been the first one there that he cut away. So the Gemara asks, "My, what is the reading of the source?" And once we could establish that, we'll then know how to deal with this particular case of a person who had cut away a baharis and became a chosan, was about to get married. How do we deal with him? Do we say that with the appearance of the second nega that obliterates the first one, and hence he will be a chosan that is tahor? And it will be a benefit for us to remain silent concerning a ruling of the second nega, because its appearance really obliterates the first one. Or do we say our remaining silent would be of no benefit to him because he is not considered removed from the first nega that he cut away until the second nega gets better, not the mere appearance of the second nega? Well, this issue remains unresolved. Teku. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, a nose that you see on the outside margin, and we've written Hatsoreim Oizen Bechor Umeis Ha'odom Shepogam, a person who inflicted an injury to his firstborn male animal's ear, and then that person died. Mahu Liknois Benoi Acharov Shelo Yoichal Me'oisoi Bechor Oilomis. Do we impose a fine on the heir, the son who inherits this particular now blemished Bechor, and say that, well, just like the father who had made this blemish, we saw according to Rabbi Eliezer, there would be a permanent prohibition if for the man who made it. Does this permanent prohibition extend to his heir as well? Under our Mivneh heading, in the on the side of the Gemara, you see a double underline. If you scan ahead in the Gemara, you will notice this double underline appears a number of times. This is used to highlight Oid Mikrim, all other cases, Shel Asiyo Shelo Kahogen, where something wrong, something improper was done, and Koinsim or Lo Koinsim Beno Achrav, and there will be the issue of, do we fine the heir, the son who follows the one who did this wrong act? Is the son also to suffer the consequences? So now we turn to the Gemara, realizing, of course, that we have a long question on our hands. You can see that immediately by looking at the shin that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and a vertical dashed line that follows. And after that long question, the Gemara then answers, and the answer itself will take a few lines to develop, and it will take you to the bottom of the page. The Gemara. Boi mine Rabbi Yirmiyahu mi Rabbi Zeira. Tzoreim oizen bevechor umeis. A person who made a notch in his firstborn male animal, and he then died. The person died. Mahu liknois benoi achrov. Do we impose a fine on his son that his son will never be able to benefit from this bechor? We saw Shitas Rabbi Lezer in the Mishnah that if a person did it, impose this notch in the ear, that he himself would not be allowed to benefit from this animal, even if a subsequent blemish appears. He is fined forever regarding this Bechor. What about the wrongdoer's son? And now what the Gemara does is it presents two, we'll call, precedent cases where the result in each case is actually of an opposite nature. So our job will be to take a look at this case of Tzoreim Ozen Bechor and figure which one of these other known cases are we to parallel the Bechor case. Im timtze lomar moicher avdo li oivdei kechavim umeis konsubino acharov if you take the approach with regard to there's a wrongdoing if one sells his servant to an idol worshiper. The rule is that if a person sells his servant to an idol worshiper, he must redeem that Eved from the idol worshiper, even if it means he is paying the purchaser, the idol worshiper who purchased the servant, 10 times the value of that Eved. That is what the Torah expects of a person who sold his servant into servitude. Now, if we take the approach that if a person did that and he himself died, Konsu Beno Achrov, we impose the same strict approach with regard to his son, that his son is expected to redeem the Eved from the idol worshiper, even if it means paying 10 times his value. That may be the case because Mishum the Chol Yoima V'Yoima Mafke Lei Mimitzvus, because every day that this Eved is in the domain of the idol worshiper, this Eved, this servant, is not performing mitzvahs that he would have been bound by had he remained by the Jew. So that by selling the Eved to an idol worshiper, a major wrongdoing has been committed with regard to the Eved, insofar that he's not going to be practicing the mitzvos, the Torah commandments that he was practicing while he was under the ownership of a Jew. Therefore, because of this severe wrongdoing, we impose the fine on the wrongdoer's son as well. Now, that's one side. Im Timtzei Lomar, if you look at the case of Kivein Malachta B'moyed Umeis, Lo Konsu B'no Acharov, a word about this case. Chol HaMoed, the intermediate weekdays of a holiday period, are days that are, technically speaking, are restricted in many, many activities. Many activities, for example, sewing and agricultural work, these are things that one is not allowed to do during the Chol HaMoed period. Let us say a person, we should note, however, there are cases that if a person, for whatever reason, couldn't have done these particular activities before Chol HaMoed, and then Chol HaMoed comes about, and if he doesn't do it, he will suffer a loss. So there are leniencies allowed for under such circumstances. But here we're dealing with a person who deliberately held off on doing these activities during the year and waited for Chol HaMoed to come about, and then thought in his mind that he would use Chol HaMoed as an excuse for, now I don't go to my regular 9-to-5 job. It's Chol HaMoed, we have vacation, so now I'll have a chance to do those activities. That's called Kivein Malachta B'moyed. Let us say a person, in fact, did that. He had, let us say, a garment to sew, and he held off till Chol HaMoed, hoping to sew it during Chol HaMoed, but he died before ever getting a chance to do it. He died. Now he has a son that's there, and the son, let us say, needs this garment very badly. So lo konsu b'no achrov, we don't restrict his son from doing that activity, because as far as the son is concerned, he'll be experiencing a loss if he doesn't do the activity. So that even though his father would be restricted because he deliberately delayed in doing this particular forbidden activity, we won't impose that restriction on his son. Why? Mishum d'lo ovid li'isura. The son didn't do anything wrong. Nothing, no actual, the father, we should say, didn't actually do anything wrong yet. He simply delayed in doing what he should have done. So being that the father himself didn't do anything wrong, therefore, with regard to Kiva and Lach and Lloyd, we don't impose this restriction on the son. Here in the case of the Bechor, where a man imposed a blemish on the Bechor, he was Tzormos and Bechor, and he died. Now, what is the din with regard to the heir? Do we say, L'didei konsu rabbonon v'holasei, that the fine is is, let's say, person-centered, and the offender is no longer here, so therefore there's no room for a fine. Or do we say that the fine was imposed on the item concerning which the wrong thing was done? And here, the item is around. The bechor is around. And that even though the offender is no longer here, but the item is here, and the fine concerns the item. Omar Le, now the question has been presented, Rabbi Zero responds, Tanisuha, let us respond from the following source. Based on the following source, we should get an answer. The source deals with prohibited activities during the Shemitah year. The Shemitah is the sabbatical year during which, generally speaking, agricultural activities are prohibited. The source says, Sada shenizkavtso b'shvias. The word niskavtso, though it appears as a long word, it has the root of the word is the word coats. This is a field. Coats is a thorn, a field from which thorns were removed, and this was done wrongfully, but it was done during a Shemitah year. We say Tizra l'motzoi shvias. We don't impose a fine with regard to the eighth year. Motzoi shvias is the year after the Shemitah year, and we allow it to be planted because this is considered an insignificant activity. So, though something incorrect was done, but it's an insignificant act of wrongdoing. However, netaiva, nidaira, if it was netaiva or nidaira are different forms of fertilizing a field. Without getting into the detailed differences, a field was fertilized incorrectly during Shemitah. Lo tizra lemotzoi shvias. We don't allow a field like that to be planted on the next year. We don't. Because a significant wrongful activity was done, we impose a fine with regard to allowing it to be planted the following year. The Omer of Yosi Bar Chanina Naktinan, we have a tradition, a tradition, or a Kabbalah, Hetiva Umeis, in the case that if someone did this wrongful act of fertilizing his field during the Shemitah year, and the offender died, Benoi Zoyor, the son is allowed to plant the field the next year. Alma, we see from this the day konsu rabbanon, the vrei lo konsu rabbanon, that the fine is imposed on the individual and not the item. And as a result, we see that the vrei lo konsu rabbanon, and this regarding the bechor also, we see that the fine would have not extended to the son, and in the case of someone who wrongfully notched the ear of his firstborn and then died, so the son will be able to benefit from this bechor, and we will not say that it is permanently forbidden. Omar Abaye Naktinon, we have a tradition, Time Taharoisov Shel Chavero Umeis. A person ruined his friend's taharos. In other words, if someone took a dead sheretz and threw it on his friend's tohor produce, and then this offender died, lo konsu beno achrov. The son, the survivor, the heir of the offender, is not expected to pay for the ruined taharos. My taima. Why is there no fine imposed on the son that he should pay for what his father did? So the Gemara explains, Hezek she'eno nikur lo shmei hezek. Damage took place, but it's not a visible, it's not nikur, it's not an obvious, you can't see, there's no physical change in fruits that are tamei as opposed to those that are tohar. That's called a hezek, a damage, but it's not nikur. It's not called nezek from a Torah standpoint. Something like that that was done, some type of invisible damage that was done, from a Torah standpoint, there is no pay obligation. There is no obligation to offer restitution. Knosa de Rabbanan Hu. The whole idea of offering restitution for the case of Hezek Shenu Nikur is a rabbinic ruling. As such, the day Kansu Rabbanan, the very low Kansu Rabbanan, when the rabbis imposed the need, or the requirement of paying for invisible damage, they imposed that payment only on the offender himself and not on his heir. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.